Hey guys, welcome back to the New Nine Golf Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Cubitt, and today we have a really good guest for you. This is someone that's really affluent in golf Canada specifically, both as a player and now as a coach. He's someone specifically in the Calgary area, and he's had a lot of accomplishments and some really good ones as of recent. One of his students just joined the PGA Tour, played his first PGA Tour event, so we're going to get into that in this interview. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the New Nine Golf Podcast, Todd Halpin. Okay, guys, welcome back to the New Nine Golf Podcast and YouTube channel. I'm here today with someone who I've been trying to get on the podcast for a long time. He is so busy in the summertime with all of his lessons and coaching that he does. He's very gracious with his time to give us a half hour of his time. I'd like to welcome to the podcast, Todd Halpin. So, Todd, thanks so much for joining the New Nine Podcast.
Yeah, no problem at all. Happy to be here. I've seen what you guys have done so far. It looks awesome. Happy to be a part of it.
So if you are involved in the Golf Calgary community or Golf Alberta, people know your name in the golf coaching industry. Give me an idea of how you got into the coaching industry, or maybe just a little bit in the background of your own golf.
Yeah, sure. So specifically on the coaching side, you know, it was the genesis of basically my whole life. I'd been playing junior golf in Alberta my whole life. We don't need to get into the details there, but you know, junior provincials, Alberta Ams, going to play at university. And that's kind of where I realized I was meant to be a coach. We had a pretty solid team at the University of Victoria, and we ended up really helping each other out a lot. And I just started to notice that I was kind of taking a lead on those little extra things that we need to do to win national championships. And maybe most of that stuff wasn't even my idea. I was just relaying that to the team and being that coach figure. And that's when I kind of realized that's what I was meant to be. And, you know, I made it on the national team and then to play on the Canadian Tour. And my first event as a pro, my friend and I developed the Swinkie. So it was a golf training product. My partner, Brian Benedictson, he invented it and I helped him develop it. And it was a training tool. So I didn't even play one pro event and all of a sudden I was inventing products or creating products that helped golfers to practice. And so my whole pro career, I was running this company on the side, trying to manufacture a golf training product. And so in that, I spent 5 or 6 years learning all about the educational part of golf, whether it's how an academy operates in Texas versus California, or basically how to bring my product to market. So 4 or 5 years selling to academies, I had a pretty good scope of how to build up that instruction side. And you know, you kind of partner that with my background in behavioral psychology. I got my degree there at UVic in that for the coaching purpose, and then playing pro golf as well. So all those three things combined, and here we are.
I'm interested in your training tool. How did you come up with the idea to make your own training tool?
Well, to be fair, my friend Brian invented the first one. I have one right here. We could go into it, but basically what the concept was a Swiss Army knife concept. So within the golfer's toolbox, you have a stretching tool, an alignment system, a weighted swing club, a driver protector, a putting system, a ball position station. It's a very comprehensive tool. So we kind of, you know, we're the 5-in-1 coach in a bag kind of a concept. And, you know, we sold a lot of them and we built a lot too. And, you know, Davis Love III was one of our shareholders, so he saw the value. He was one of the partners that was able to get us kind of inside the ropes on the PGA Tour. And you know, we had over 100 players on the PGA Tour with a Swinkie, with a golfer's toolbox. And I still get pictures and texts all the time. Oh, hey, Patrick Rogers is using one. Angel Cabrera has one. Ricky's got his out. Like, so it's pretty cool to just see that little reminder of something that I made no money on.
That must be pretty rewarding to see a PGA Tour player using something that you made.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, it's just one of those things now I look back on. It would have been nice to build the business out a little bit differently. You know, I think being an entrepreneur, you can always look back on your first couple of companies and be like, wow, I wish I knew what I knew now back then. But yeah, it does give me a little bit of, you know, what would you call it? Like, I guess notoriety in the golf business, where you know I did that. I developed a training aid that people love. I see them all over the place in Alberta and pro events. I'll just be walking by. There's, you know, a pro I haven't seen in 5 years. He still has it in his golf bag. He's not doing it for me. He's doing it because it's awesome. So yeah, pretty cool to be a part of something like that.
And did you just mention that you made no money on it? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, there's a big difference between a very good product and a company. So we had the product. It was fantastic. But to build out a company that could support four or five people full time manufacturing in three countries and distribution all over the world, it just wasn't feasible. So by about year three, we had started to look for things like partnerships and distribution deals and manufacturing deals. And we kind of had to just manage these other companies building it. And, you know, we just made some mistakes along the way. You know, I can't imagine how, you know, my partner feels, and I'm sure he's, you know, thinks about it every once in a while too, what he would have done differently, as I know I do. But as entrepreneurs, going from a little idea, you know, in the parking lot of a tour event to a global distribution network, you know, there's some snags along the way, and yeah, you learn from it. So
I'm interested in your playing career. So you played university golf and you took a kick at playing professionally. Were you on the Canadian Tour or were you playing your pro golf?
Yeah, so I was a full-time member of the Canadian Tour for one season and kind of conditional status for kind of the span of about three. Yeah, you know, it was funny. Growing up in Alberta, we had such a strong province. The year that I was coming through, like guys that I was playing against, Ryan Yip, Mike Mazie. I mean, Dale Vallely, I played against him 30 times. He's on tour now. So we had a batch of guys that were unbelievable. James Love, Barrett Girosh. And so I would always come 8th or 10th. Like, I wasn't cracking top 5 at provincials. So, you know, kind of flew under the radar a little bit, went to a Canadian university, and that's where I kind of blossomed a little bit, grew up, got a bit bigger, got a bit stronger. In my 3rd and 4th year, it was finally like, I'm playing pretty good against these guys without hardly practicing at all. Because we had Canadian university, we had Canadian lifestyle, we were, you know, I was playing intramural volleyball and ice hockey and golfing and school.
Wow.
So I wasn't getting a lot of reps in on the golf side, but that's what taught me to be a coach too. Like, our team really bonded, and we worked really hard to work together and coach each other. And we ended up winning 3 national championships working as a team. And so that's when I was like, okay, you know, I could probably do this if I really put my mind to it. And then that summer, finished 2nd in the Canadian universities, 2nd at NAI Nationals, and 2nd at the Canadian Am. Lost to Richard Scott in the final. So there's 3 second places that with one swing here or there, it could have been 3 wins.
Right.
So I've kind of always just flown under the radar a little bit. And, you know, I still think to this day that if I had given it a better shot, I might have lasted out there a little bit longer. But like I said, the first tournament, TELUS Open in Edmonton, we founded this company, literally on a napkin. So, you know, I did go back to get my card in 2015 without much prep, only missed by a couple shots. But, you know, I kind of found my calling, I think. I definitely am just, I want to be like a builder of the game. I want to, like, I kind of see that sort of future for me. If you get into like Alberta Sports Hall of Fame or, you know, whatever it is, I would want to be in as a builder, not a player. So that's kind of the way I think about my role in golf now. I still play tournaments. Mostly it's to visit and have a beer with the guys mostly, but it still is fun to compete and fun to get the swing going good enough where you can actually shoot some scores.
So when you went from playing almost full time, there's a lot of stuff in between by the sounds of it, but then to start coaching, where did you get your first full-time coaching gig?
So I came right back here to the golf center. I actually grew up down the street, and I used to work here in high school, you know, just in the summers in between golf tournaments and stuff like that, just behind the counter. And, you know, I had some pretty good mentors here, Paul Horton and Jay Myron, to name a couple guys in town. They were here, and, you know, I was just working in the shop while they were the pros. And, you know, I guess I, you know, when I quit playing pro golf and quit the Golfer's Toolbox business, it kind of both came to an abrupt halt, I guess. Maybe not the way I'd always dreamt of it going, right? I was hoping I would just go win the Masters or something, right? But right. Yeah, so both those things kind of stopped, and I was like, okay, well, you've always been a coach. I mean, you're out there coaching guys all the time, so you might as well do that as a living. And so basically turned pro that fall, or PGA of Alberta Pro, got all the details I needed to do there. And, I mean, it's 100% commission. So there was really not a hiring process. It was just a request. Can I teach here? Yes, and go. And so since then, I've been 100% commission. And, you know, that was 2011 in the fall. So it's been basically, you know, 9 seasons straight of commission-based coaching. And when you have that kind of pressure, you got to bust your ass a little bit. You know, I work my ass off to do this job. So, you know, I take a lot of pride in being a full-time coach and a full-time teacher. And, you know, it takes a lot of work to stay current. But, yeah, that's how we get to where we are.
You work with a handful of guys that are maybe on the Canadian Tour, maybe playing college golf, and now your first, I'm guessing it was your first student, made it onto the PGA Tour. Can you confirm if that was your first? And give me a little backstory about Aaron.
Yes, that would be my first. I would say I've coached a few guys that have been on tour before and dabbled in that, but none as full-time as Aaron. Aaron came to me about 3 years ago, and he was already an incredible golfer. He's been pro for a couple of years, and you know, he probably heard about me through the grapevine that maybe he should just come and, you know, shoot the shit a little bit and kind of, you know, get some different perspective on things and maybe just get a sense of, hey, like, let's just talk to a guy who's been there and done a business on the side and played golf and has this background. Like, what experiences can he share? And we kind of hit it off right away. And you know, it's been a good coaching relationship ever since. We don't dabble a ton in swing mechanics at all. It's more just like open discussion about them, not about like, oh, hey, you know, Aaron, I think you should do this in your golf swing. Like, no, I'm not gonna make that decision. I would say, you know what, you have a question, let's find Scott Hamilton in Texas or Scott Couks in Toronto, or go send your videos to this guy. Like, I'll help him get that advice. That's a coach, right? I'm not gonna take ownership over something I'm not confident in. So yeah, it's been very much a coaching kind of almost a mentorship thing in a way. And it's been a lot of fun, man. He teaches me sometimes more than I teach him, right? And, you know, he's had some incredible experiences, as you know, in the last 3 months. What a whirlwind of a life he's had. So, yeah, I just look forward to talking to him every couple of days and shooting the shit.
So a little background for our audience. The golfer is Aaron Crawford. So he actually plays out of my home course out of Country Hills. But yeah, obviously knowing that you coach him, he had to shoot a 63, I think it was, in a Monday qualifier to get into the event.
Yeah.
How do you find out that he went as low? Are you following him online and you know right away, or does he call you up and say, coach, I got in?
Yeah, so a couple of things to touch on there. Like, our relationship is, like, I treat him as a PGA Tour player already. Like, him getting into Monday, like, that's what we're doing, right? I'm not too excited about it, to be perfectly honest. But he did shoot a 67 in the pre-qualifier, so pretty solid. And then to get into that Monday, we talked on the phone Sunday night for about an hour and a half. And I mean, Monday qualifiers are pretty absurd, right? So I kind of made a joke to him, like, oh yeah, I'll fly out on Tuesday. So he calls me at like 1:30 on Monday after he's done. He's like, well, I shot 63, pack your bags. So I spend Monday afternoon trying to figure out how to get to Minneapolis. I couldn't go. 2 week quarantine, just not gonna work out for me right now in the summer. So his dad ended up going down and caddying for him. But yeah, pretty remarkable round. For sure. You know, what we talked about Sunday night, there's no secrets there. And, you know, I'm just there to be a sounding board for him more than anything. And, you know, one thing that Aaron does really well is he acts as if he's meant to be on the tour. And that's not being cocky. That's not being anything bad. It's being prepared. He's poised. He's professional. He's prepared all the time. He plays golf with confidence. He doesn't pick shots that you'd pick if you want to come 30th. He picks shots that you need to pick to win. And when you make those decisions all day long, you need a golf swing. You need your game to be pretty on point. And that's what his expectations are. So I wasn't surprised he shot 63, because that's what he's trying to do.
Right.
That's what we're working on. It's not a surprise.
What's next for him? Now he's played in one event, missed the cut. What are you guys doing to get him on to tour, hopefully full-time?
Yeah, I mean, a year ago, I think that question would have had a much more linear, straightforward answer, a much more identifiable with what's going on right now. I don't really know. You know, we've got the Mackenzie Tour this year and those Canada Life Series. He's playing okay in them for sure, like hitting the ball great, maybe not scoring as good as you could, but conditions at that golf course are extremely challenging. So ultimately, we're just going to try to get him as many tournaments as we can. He's going to have to pick and choose when he travels, home. As you know, the challenges with that right now are pretty serious. So we'll just have to wait and see.
I'm interested still a little bit in your own personal golf game. We were talking a little off camera about a hole-in-one or multiple hole-in-ones that may or may not be hole-in-ones. I'm interested in just kind of the background on the hole-in-ones you've experienced.
Yeah, that's a good question. I get asked it a lot, and I've just been answering six, and it's like, that's not even right. Like, it's not even a real answer. I've got four legit ones, and I've got a couple that shouldn't even count. The par three course, that probably shouldn't count. I've done it a couple times in practice rounds on my second ball, so it's not like I even lost the first ball. I was just going for a different spot on the green. That's happened a couple times. Another time, a ball should have gone in the hole. It was kind of like a pre-COVID cup. It was an Ironman at Mackenzie Meadows, and like it should have dropped in. I'm not being like facetious there, saying like, oh, it should have gone in. Like, no, it should have dropped. But they had an insert in the hole to make the hole super small, so when the flag's in, it won't go in.
Right.
So I call that, a couple other ones, halfers to get me up to six.
That's funny. I think a lot of people can empathize with the COVID pin experience, because I've had even just 10-foot putts that lip out because there's a pool noodle at the bottom of the cup that I've heard guys that we play with have tried to flown it in, and they can see it ricochet and bounce, you know, 20 feet in the air and not even go in.
Yeah, you're like, that should have been in.
Exactly. Yeah. Can you recall the best day on the golf course you ever had?
The best day on the golf course. I've definitely had a few pretty cool experiences, but I mean, I can't say any emotion or any sort of rush I've ever had compared to shooting 59. When I shot 59 at Mackenzie Meadows, 13 under par, Brad Russell and John Owens, I lost my mind. Like, I shot 6 under on the front, I started eagle, birdie, birdie. So I'm like, okay, wow, 30. That's pretty cool to shoot 30 on the front. Brad's like, well, I just shoot 29 on the back. We kind of laugh about it. And then I'm like, okay, let's think about this. And I went through the front nine and I made every putt, right? I made every single putt. So I'm like, okay, I'm still in this. It's still 100%. And then I went eagle, par, eagle, par. So just like that, I'm 10 under. And, or par, eagle rather, sorry. Yeah, that's how it works at Mackenzie. And so now I'm sitting at 10 under par with 5 holes to play. I'm like, holy crap, I can get 3 more birdies. Birdie, birdie. I'm like, oh my gosh, right? So now I'm just like losing my mind because I know what's happening. I'm 100% aware of the 50 barrier. And on 18, I push my drive, barely clear the water, probably a yard over the water. And I've got to hit this upslope 9-iron over a tree, kind of to a blind green. I can't even really see the green. I just hit it. Then I make the 22-footer, and I went completely berserk. I was screaming at the top of my lungs, just like, yes! Oh my God, I've made it! I've created history. This is 2003, right? So like, it hadn't even really been done more than once or twice on the PGA Tour. So this was like the most, I thought I was like one of 20 people to ever do this in golf. So I was losing my mind. So that has to be the most ecstatic day, most ecstatic moment.
What's the next week after that you shoot 59? I imagine there's some news outlets getting a hold of you, or was it as rare as you thought?
Crazy story about this too, actually. I haven't even talked about this for probably 10 years. That week was part of a week, and I'll shout out to Randy Robb for this one. Okay, so Randy Robb changed my grip. I used to hold it with a really strong grip, and he's like, you know what, you'll probably plateau with that. It's worth it to try to neutralize that a little bit. Okay. So I struggle for a couple months. I think I'm ready to go to a tournament. I go to the Glencoe Invitational and shoot a million. I'm like, oh crap. So I come back to the drawing board a little bit, practice for another week. Then I shoot 59, 63, 64, 66, and 64, something like that. I'd have to go back into my journal, but it was like Mackenzie Meadows, Willow Park, Lacombe, Willow Park, or something like that. And I shot 35 under in 5 rounds, and the 59 was part of it.
Wow.
And it just goes to show, like, if you get that technique right, if you can click with something and it really lines up, you can start to shoot pretty low. So it was a great week.
No kidding.
It was a really good week. Yeah, 35 under in 5 rounds, averaging 7 under per round.
Have you gotten close before? Have you had the 50s in sight since?
I was thinking about it 2 days ago at the PGA Championships in Red Deer. I shot 6 under on the front. I was chasing Wes and Riley down, and okay, then shot even on the back. Still managed a 66, but yeah. That's the last time I thought about it in a round of golf.
That's crazy. 59. We just had a poll up recently on our Instagram. So we started with, have you broken 100? Almost everyone, yes. Have you broken 90 and 80, 70 and so on? And then we put 60 up just to see if anyone, and of course there's a few jokesters that did, so it threw off our percentage. But now we officially know someone who's shot in the 50s. So that's a win in itself.
Yeah, it's the coolest day ever, man.
We'll flip the conversation. Do you recall the worst day you've ever had on the golf course?
I do. I do, actually. There's a couple. for different reasons, I would say. So I would say probably like emotionally, the toughest day was in my second PGA Tour event. It was kind of a tough scenario. It was at Glen Abbey. I played on Thursday, I played four holes of golf. So it had been raining all week. It was such a shit break. Like I won the Monday qualifier. Okay, 66 in the Monday qualifier. I'm like, I'm in, guys. I'm in again. Like, holy shit, this is amazing. Tuesday, Wednesday, poured rain all day. I didn't even see the golf course. It's Glen Abbey. I've never played it. Everyone's played it 50 times. Great. So Wednesday night, I end up sneaking out for a practice round. I got out to play with Jason Day and Jimmy Walker, and it was super cool. I was super pumped. Thursday, rained all day, 7-hour rain delay. I get to play four holes Thursday night, four over par. Great. This sucks. So I got to sleep. So now Friday, I got to play 32 holes in a PGA Tour event, and I'm already four over. Barely even had a fighting chance. So I'm already just emotionally just like so like rattled, you know, like how could this work out in this way, right? Because no one's going to know what I really went through to get to this point. But yeah, 7-hour rain delay, couldn't hit balls. What do you want from me?
Yeah.
Right? So then I play the first like, I guess 14 holes that would have been in one under. So first round, 75. Okay, I'm one under on the day. This is great. Starting to get tired. It's hot. And so I'm you know, maybe I play, maybe get the hole count wrong a little bit here. But let's say I play another 6 or 7 holes, maybe back to one over. So now I'm even. I got 5 or 6 holes to play now, which is like 2 hours out there. The cut's 4 under, and I know I'm going to miss the cut. So I just have to play golf for 2 hours knowing I missed the cut and I had the shit break. I was fighting back tears, man. It was so embarrassing. It was so frustrating. I tried so hard. But yeah, to get to like the four holes left and I'm missing the cut by 6 already and know that you're done and you may never come back to this place again, it's pretty rough. It was pretty hard, man. I think about that day all the time. And it definitely means that I'll never feel that on the golf course again. So like I've got no fear now. I can go play and like I won't feel that like mortified, humiliated, devastated, not humiliated so much as devastated, right? Like just, oh, all this work and now that. So that would be the worst day.
That was totally a 180. That sucked, man. I can totally empathize with, like, I can feel, you know, we've all been in tournaments or played that you have such decent expectations, right? And I think no one cares more than yourself, that you think other people care about what you're shooting or following you. I bet you everyone that you know is just beyond excited for you, that you're there in that moment living out your dream, that I bet you a lot more positive came from it. But we're all, you know, victims of beating ourselves up a lot. If there's any positives that you could take away, what would be some positives that you could take away from that experience?
Well, certainly the mental prep, you know, like being in that position, having to go through those emotions and deal with that, you know, that gives me, lack of a better way to say this, like golf wisdom. I feel like I'm 180 years old in golf years. So not much is going to rattle me out there. You know, you can try to get in my head. It can be all kinds of situations. It's not going to bother me. You know, I'll bother myself more than a situation is going to bother me. But, you know, nothing like that is going to do it. Because to be fair, I don't even think in that situation I really did anything wrong. I just felt like I got ripped off. You know, I win the Monday qualifier, no practice rounds Tuesday or Wednesday, huge rain delay, sopping wet golf course, exhausted. Like, it's just a bad break.
Yeah.
You know, so it just has really prepared me to handle all kinds of challenges out there.
Right. Can you think of an experience, maybe not necessarily in golf, maybe in business or relationship, that, you know, the New Nine brand is all about coming over or overcoming those obstacles, that, you know, shit happens. It's not about what we did, it's about what we do moving forward. Can you think of a New Nine experience that you have experienced in your life?
Yeah, I feel like that's something that a lot of golfers can kind of latch onto, that philosophy, that concept of overcoming that barrier, because golf is all about those mistakes. And I feel like on almost every single round you play, you're going to have a scenario where you hit one of your worst shots. It's just not a good golf shot. And the stat that I look for in teammates, in students that I want to coach, is the bounce back stat. How do you rebound after a bad outcome? And those are the moments that I notice as a coach are really what define how good a person's going to get at golf. You need to pay attention more in those scenarios. When you're nervous and you block one out of bounds or whatever, that's where I need you to key in on your finish position or the tension levels in your body. I need you actually more like to learn more from those experiences than the good ones, right? Because the good ones, everything is going fine,
right?
So I feel like every shot I miss almost, I'm looking for that bounce back stat. I'm looking to like use that as a learning, as a jumping point to get better and to, you know, maybe lessen my chances of making that or a similar mistake in the future.
Now where you're coaching today specifically, we were out earlier shooting with the Golf and Tacos ladies that you help coach. You're really helping grow the game for entry level ladies. And I think there's more than just beginners. There's some, we were watching some girls that were crushing the ball. Tell me a little bit about Golf and Tacos and what you're doing to help the ladies get into the game.
Sure. So yeah, Golf and Tacos is something that was started by Katie Buckle and Berkeley Dahl 5 years ago. I came on board 4 years ago. So I've been the lead coach that whole time. This year we've expanded to a few other golf courses. The demand is quite high for it. So, you know, it's I feel very lucky for the opportunity to do that and to be one of the major touch points for so many golfers in that learning realm, in the development realm. They get so much advice from coworkers, friends, family, those, you know, boyfriends, brothers, that kind of thing. And while it's usually well-intentioned, it's often incomplete and not applied at the right time. So, you know, these group classes here at this private driving range give them the environment to really go through those learning processes and just kind of have that safe space to go through some of the tricky things about golf. It's not the easiest game to learn, right? There's some mechanical things and some geometry that just have to occur consistently to hit the ball well. So yeah, we do offer three different levels. There's a mild, medium, and a spicy class. You know, some of the parameters to define what a golfer or where a golfer would fit in those three categories. It's not so much about score. It's a lot just about how far you're hitting it, if you're hitting it consistently, and maybe how often you're playing. Right. So, you know, a spicy golfer might just be playing twice a week. Maybe two ladies leagues and their family golfs a lot. So yeah, come to the spicy class. You're gonna need to know some of these things, because in golf, these girls are going to be getting advice. They're going to be learning, not just here. They're going to be learning when they go play. So I'm trying to prepare them with the right information, with the right priorities in what they think are their fundamentals, so that they can kind of filter and organize a lot of the information or learning that is going to come at them, not by choice.
It looked like a lot of fun. I was just thinking in the back of my head that my wife would love being in one of these classes to just get that coaching and to see the ball flight and a beautiful day and a beautiful range. It looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, so you hit the nail on the head there. So I think one of the the competitive advantages of Golf and Tacos, one of the things that makes us really unique, is the ability to blend that fun and upbeat like environment and positive encouragement and all those kinds of things with some pretty darn accurate golf swing instruction. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and while you can coach a tour player or a higher level golfer at noon and 1 o'clock, you know, I still do a ton of work with new golfers and beginners, and the language changes. And so for me, it's really exciting to get to, you know, get to teach in a group setting, because what it forces me to do is it forces me to prioritize, like, what's the most important thing to explain this concept. Because there's going to be six different learners here, six different people with their own set of ideas and perspectives and feelings and history and everything like that. So when you really are challenged with like narrowing down either the verbal instruction or what image they need to see or what cues they need to hear, you know, that priority, that learning structure really helps when I'm teaching other people too. So we try and do as much technique as we can without doing technique. Right. Make it fun, make it upbeat, but really hammer home the things that we're really looking for in a positive golf swing and a functional golf swing.
Cool. Well, yeah, we're shooting some content for Golf and Taco specifically. So that's something that our viewers can take a look at one of our other YouTube videos or when that releases. Is there anything else that we can plug for your own personal business? Anything we can send the viewers to take a look at?
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're sitting here at the south end of the Golf Future Academy. So we do run a full-time academy here. There's six instructors and we do a ton of junior programming. It may be a little too dark to see, but we've got tons of space here to be able to have bigger groups of kids. We used to do schools. Hopefully we'll get to do that again. So just really happy to be a part of this facility. The new owners are from Calgary. and they're putting a lot of work into making a smart range. You can see how lit up it is. It's going to be a busy place next summer, especially. You know, we've got a 30,000 square foot putting green going in. So, you know, anything we can do to help promote the facility and the academy is great. Yeah, really excited to see the changes here. It's going to be great.
And you have an affiliation with the Fan 960. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that started about 5 years ago. A friend of mine, Ryan Pinder, who's a morning show host for the Fan 960, you know, wanted to do a golf hit, a weekly golf hit. And so we just kind of went for it. I was a little rough around the edges for the first little bit, but, you know, starting to get the hang of it a little bit more now. And yeah, so more or less Wednesday mornings, 9:30, we go on the morning show and just kind of chat about the PGA Tour, some of the bigger stories in golf. And, you know, it's my job specifically to really key in on some of the inside stories in Canadian golf. And I love it because it gives me that extra motivation each week to kind of text a buddy who may be playing out in Ontario, or, you know, a guy like Aaron Crawford, see like how are things going down on the tour, and, you know, get some insider things that you can share with the community here, and certainly focus on the Canadians. And so that's what I'm passionate about, like being a builder. I want to grow the game. So any chance I get to kind of support PGA of Alberta, Alberta Golf, you know, anyone that's supporting golf, I'm going to do the same thing. So going on the Fan 960 gives me that window to do so. They're pretty okay with me talking about whatever I want to. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to try to grow the game.
Well, you're fantastic on the mic and you're a really good storyteller. So that's why we're so happy to get you on the podcast. That's all the questions that I have for you. Todd, I really appreciate you making the time for us to come by. You're staying late after hours just to help us get some golf content. And we really do appreciate that. Normal circumstances, I'd shake your hand. But with COVID, we'll leave that one out. Hopefully we can touch base in the future. And I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. It was great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Stay tuned, check out our website, new9golf.com, see what hats are in stock, and do your best to support the golf community. Thanks so much.